What's going on, guys? It is a Wednesday night. I'm Solomonster back with you here for your AEW Dynamite review after a very busy weekend coming off of the Survivor Series. And we had a very busy night here on the stream here on Monday night. Tonight, we talk AEW, the continuation of the Continental Classic, which is what is really dominating the entire month of December here on this program. They have matches in the Gold League, matches in the Blue League. We had two more of them here tonight. And so I thought we would break it down here as far as the highlights and the lowlights of tonight's show. Because Dynamite over the last several, really months, not just weeks, has been hit or miss. There have been some good shows. There have been some not so good shows. The highlights, though, tonight were the two Continental Classic matches. We got some really good wrestling. We had Brody King and Claudio Castagnoli in the main event. Second week in a row that Brody King has taken the main event spot here on this show. And we had Shelton Benjamin one-on-one with Kyle Fletcher to open the show. And I very much enjoyed both of those matches. We also had another very good match between Jay White and Pac that was not part of the Continental Classic. But it did lead into an angle post-match that set things in motion for what appears to be a four-way on the horizon. We didn't get any kind of official announcement, but a four-way on the horizon for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. We saw coming out of Full Gear, one thing that AEW did that I liked was they set up multiple potential challengers for Jon Moxley's title. Orange Cassidy, still in the mix. Don't really care about that so much, but they had Jay White and Hangman Page, after their great match that they had, are now part of this storyline. And I'm glad. Because this has been one of the chief complaints about the Death Rider storyline up to this point is that, well, we know Darby has an issue with, you know, Moxley, and he wants to get his hands on him, and Orange Cassidy, we've seen a different side of him, but where are the stars? Where are the big guns? Where are the big names? Why are these people not getting involved here? And why is there no sense of urgency to try to take down Jon Moxley and his crew? Well, now we have two big names in Jay White and Hangman Page who have been directly injected here into this storyline. And we saw what happened in the post-match tonight where we saw Hangman come out. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed the post-match. That was definitely a highlight of the night. We had a women's match as well on this show with Anna Jay and Penelope Ford. And on the surface, I mean, really nothing special about this storyline or this rivalry. It's kind of a rivalry renewed between these two because there's a history that goes back years. And you're forgiven if you don't remember or have any recollection whatsoever of there being a history between these two women. But they did a good job, I think, with the video packages tonight in different instances, that is including that, of educating you or re-educating you about why this match is taking place. You hear that complaint a lot. Random matches. Why is this match taking place? I like that they set the table for us, you know, heading into that match. And the match itself was really nothing terribly special, but they did set up the next challenger here for Mercedes Moné and the TBS Championship. So that's a good thing. And we are getting the return of Bandido. Bandido is somebody who did not get to spend a lot of time in AEW before he got hurt. And he suffered a wrist injury. And he had surgery. And then he didn't heal properly from the surgery. So he was all ready to come back, but his wrist still wasn't right. He had to have another surgery. The man has been out of action for almost a year and a half. And we got a vignette tonight promoting the forthcoming return of Bandido, who, you know, he comes out, he wears a mask. We've seen other luchador performers on this show, but he was able to get himself over in his matches in a way that not everybody can. He was a fan favorite in a major way until he got hurt at the worst possible time. Bandido was great. So the fact that they are now promoting his return is great news because it was funny too because there was an item, I don't know if it was the Observer or where I read it, in the last few weeks about him. And I remembered, I said, holy shit, I forgot that he's been out, you know, for this extended period of time. And I wonder how close he is to a return. And now here we see the vignette for it. So it'd be very good to get him back. The lowlights. There's really one lowlight. That's the good news. The good news is there's really only one lowlight I will put in this category tonight that I really did not like. And that was the Battle Royal. we had a Dynamite Diamond Dozen Battle Royal that I will get into, and I fucking hated this. It was a waste of my time. And I also kind of misunderstood, I guess, exactly who was going to be in said Battle Royal. We'll talk more about that. This, of course, all revolves around the Dynamite Diamond Ring that MJF has won every single year of its existence, going all the way back to 2019. There's no mystery, typically, around who's walking away with the Diamond Ring. It's always MJF, who was on the show tonight, but not in the Battle Royal. We'll talk about that. This show is not as chaotic also in terms of the pacing of the show. That's one of my complaints. So many weeks, they throw so much shit at you. And it's just one right after the other. Things don't have a chance to breathe and just sort of play out before it's on to the next. I thought tonight the pacing was definitely better. Honestly, you know, when the show was over, I was kind of surprised. You know, I was getting ready for the stream and I said, oh my God, it's almost 10 o'clock already. So it passed by pretty quickly. That's a good thing. And so on the whole, I enjoyed the show. I thought it was a good show overall. Let's talk about it here. This is your Dynamite review. It is December 4th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here on a Wednesday night. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. And as they come in, you will see them popping up on your screen. We have a little goal going. I don't know if we're going to have nearly the kind of night we had on Monday. There was a lot of excitement in the air for Raw. But anyway, there is one in the chat. You can check that out if you want. And I will read your messages a little bit later on here in the stream. The show opened. This may have been the funniest part of the entire night. The show opened with a shot as they were panning the crowd of a fan holding up a sign that said Free Phoenix. There it was. Boom. Right there on TBS. The Free Phoenix movement. We had Free Ricky last week, and now it is Free Phoenix. Well, you could find Phoenix. Phoenix is going to be at House of Glory. Our next show is coming up in only a few weeks, December 20th. We got the Hardys coming in, and Rey Fénix, not in a match. He's doing a meet and greet, but he hasn't been making very many appearances. But we will have him here in Queens for House of Glory in a few weeks. So if you want to... Everyone's saying free Phoenix and free Ricky. You could see Phoenix up close and personal on December 20th. And if you want, you can come out to Chicago on January 17th and you can see Ricky Starks back in the ring. They're going to be around. We're happy to have them. We got a video package to open the show highlighting week one of the Continental Classic and the updated leaderboards. Again, good stuff here. Just to bring everybody up to speed. Look, this is going to dominate these shows for the next several weeks, heading into World's End. If you are not a fan of the Continental Classic, you are going to be miserable with these shows because these shows are entirely based around the tournament. It's exactly the way it was last year. And I enjoyed the tournament last year, and I'm enjoying this one so far as well. But I could see where if you are not a fan of this, these shows have just got to be just a fucking slog. So... I feel like it's just one of those things that you either love, like if you love the G1, you probably love, you know, wrestling tournaments, then you'll enjoy this. But if not, well, I don't know what to tell you. But it's a Continental Classic month, so that's just the way it is. Now, for those who may have missed it, Juice Robinson, who is in the tournament, is no longer in the tournament. He lost to Will Ospreay on Collision this past weekend. In that match with Ospreay, about 2 minutes into the match, he broke his fibula, broke his leg, basically. Somehow, kept wrestling for another, I mean, they probably had like a 10-minute match, so he kept wrestling for another 8 to 10 minutes, and you wouldn't know anything was wrong. Ospreay picks up his 3 points, and then we come to find out, you know, he was seen on crutches or WrestleCade this past weekend, and people thought maybe it was a foot injury or an ankle injury. Nope. Broke his leg, and he's going to be out for some time. How long, we don't know, but obviously he is out of the tournament, and in his place will be Commander. Tony Khan loves Commander. He loves Commander and Hologram and the Beast Mortos. The only reason that Hologram is not in this tournament is because Hologram got hurt in that 2 out of 3 falls match he had with the Beast Mortos. I think it was a Wrestle Dream. We haven't seen Hologram since. People making fun of the fact that Commander is in the tournament. Look, why is Commander in the tournament? Why was Juice Robinson in the tournament? Why is Mark Briscoe in the tournament? I said last year, Mark Briscoe got one victory in the entire Continental Classic, and it was against the man who won no matches, no points at all whatsoever in Jay Lethal. They're in the tournament to look up at the lights and to eat some pinfalls against other people in the tournament, like a Ricochet, like a Will Ospreay, or a Kyle Fletcher, or Darby Allin. People that they actually, you know, have plans for, people who they actually want to rack up X number of points. That's not what Juice Robinson was in the tournament for. That was his role. Well, now he's out of it. What do you want them to do? I mean, do you expect Tony Khan is going to slot fucking Malachi Black in his place? He wanted somebody who can lose. So Commander can go in there and have spectacular matches. I mean, my God, look at the people who are in this bracket that he's going to be in the ring with. Ricochet, right? Darby. But the entire point of him even being in there is to take losses. So it really shouldn't be all that shocking or all that surprising that they would put him in Juice's place. But best to Juice. You know, he's coming off an injury. He was out with a broken back. He had back surgery. He was out for a while. He hasn't been back for more than maybe a couple of months, and now he's back on the shelf again. It's tough, you know? It's tough. Broken leg, and then Toni Storm with her torn labia. They're going to have to heal each other. They're going to have to nurse each other back to health. But anyway, Kyle Fletcher against Shelton Benjamin in the Continental Classic. This was a Blue League match. This is what opened the show tonight in ring. Despite this rule they have that anybody who is associated with anybody in the match is banned from ringside, any kind of manager, bodyguard, partner, friend, girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, pet. You know, it could be a cat, maybe a service dog, tarantula, aardvark, whatever it might be, iguana, barred from ringside. And yet there's Don Callis sitting in on commentary. He found a loophole. Why is he allowed at ringside? He's Kyle Fletcher's manager. Is it because he's sitting at the announce desk? That means he's allowed at ringside? Is there a force field around the announce desk? He's skirting the rules. This should not be allowed. But this was a battle between two heels. You would never know it, though, based on the crowd reaction here for Shelton Benjamin. The people in that building tonight, all, I think it was about 2,500, 3,000 of them, however many it was. They were all for Shelton Benjamin. They were way behind Shelton Benjamin here in this match. Especially the later the match got. They got more and more and more behind Shelton. More than any other match that he's been involved in so far. Benjamin clotheslined Fletcher out of the ring. And he tried a charge at him, but Fletcher dodged it. And instead he ate the ring post. Benjamin broke the count at 9 back into the ring, but he slid right into a huge lariat for a 2 count. So both men missed thrust kicks until Fletcher hit a Michinoku driver for a near fall. Fletcher wanted a brainbuster. Benjamin responded with a spin kick instead. Then he locked in a leg-trapped crossface. Fletcher was teasing that he might tap out, but he made the ropes instead. No, Boomerang, no. I don't believe she actually tore her labia. Again, it sounds very painful, though, if you were to actually tear. I can't relate to this, so I don't know what that feels like, but no, she's very good at what she does. She's all in on this character. Like, she is timeless Toni Storm. So I would like to believe that she did, in fact, tear her labia, and she's going to be out for a while. But I don't believe that's an officially diagnosed injury on the internal injury list. How do we even get on this topic, by the way, where we are talking about Toni Storm's labia? It's barely 11 o'clock. It's not really late enough in the night for this. Benjamin missed the charge, ate multiple kicks that led to a Fletcher elbow drop off the top row for a 2 count. Fletcher wanted a charge of his own. Benjamin, though, fired off a kick. And then it was Suplex City. German suplex after German suplex after German suplex. The crowd got louder with each one. Then the step-up corner knee caused Fletcher to roll out to the apron. He tried a sunset flip, floated over with a schoolboy, and he grabbed the hold of the ropes for added leverage. The referee did not see it, and he was able to steal the pin for the win. This started very slow, but by the end of it, the crowd was as loud for it as you could possibly ask for. They had some good near falls, some convincing near falls here. As much as they liked Shelton Benjamin, and I don't doubt that there were a lot of people in the building who genuinely liked Shelton Benjamin, you have to give credit to Kyle Fletcher and what they've been doing with him, because he is getting genuine heat. And I'm sure that's part of why the reaction was so strong for Shelton, because they were as much anti-Fletcher as they were pro-Shelton. So what they're doing with Fletcher right now, you know, they're following the correct steps with him, as far as they got him a huge win over Will Ospreay, which was a big credibility boost for him. He cut his hair. He changed his look up a little bit. He's getting some more promo time. He's got Callis with him. It's like, you know, it's any heel manager you want to look at from wrestling history. Bobby Heenan had his stable of men. Paul Heyman had the Dangerous Alliance. And later on in WWE, he managed a few different people, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. And we'll forget about Curtis Axel. Jim Cornette, all the great managers, right? They have their stable of people. Well, in AEW, it's the Callis family. And I'm not ranking the Callis family against the greatest factions of all time. I'm just saying that he is to AEW what those managers were to their respective promotions. And so Kyle Fletcher now has become effectively the crown jewel of the Callis family. Now, I don't know what that says about Konosuke Takeshita, because it feels to me like he's been on the back burner lately. But they're all in on Kyle Fletcher at the moment, which is great for Kyle Fletcher. And he picked up a big win here in this tournament. So he's got some momentum. Let's hope they continue with it. I got nothing against them trying to create new stars. What I have an issue with are some of the stars they've chosen to try to make. Some of them I don't see as being stars at the level that I think Tony Khan sees them at. Kyle Fletcher, though, could be one of those guys. So they aired highlights of the Continental Classic match from Collision last week, where Ospreay beat Juice Robinson. That was the match where he got hurt. And they showed highlights of the match between Kazuchika Okada, who came into this as the Continental Champion, and Daniel Garcia, the TNT Champion. It was champion against champion, technically. And they went to a 20-minute draw on Collision on Saturday night, which I believe is officially the lowest rated Collision of all time. Now, it aired not opposite Survivor Series. They bumped it up, though. Survivor Series started at 6 o'clock, which was early. So they started Collision at 4. I think it was a three-hour block, actually. I think it was Collision from 4 to 6, and then from 6 to 7 was Rampage. So it was out of its normal time slot. When that happens, you know, you take that number and you throw it away. But Dynamite, you can't do that with. Dynamite did, what was it, 520 or 530-something, a horrible number last week. Horrible. And it was Thanksgiving Eve, but that doesn't matter because they air on Thanksgiving Eve every single year. And by far, this was the lowest number they've ever done on Thanksgiving Eve. So you could take that holiday bullshit and stick it up your ass. That's not a valid excuse. There's no positive way to spin that number last Wednesday. That number was fucking awful. And I don't know if it would have helped. In the grand scheme, maybe it wouldn't have made a difference, but maybe it wasn't such a great idea to take Okada and Ospreay and put them on the Saturday show at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when you knew going in, out of the usual time slot, you weren't even going to get your usual Saturday audience. And instead of spreading the wealth around with some of those names and maybe having them on Wednesday, you had them on Saturday, and so you got double fucked. But yeah, there's no good way to spin that number from last Wednesday, but it would have been nice to have Will Ospreay in the ring or have Okada in the ring. We haven't seen Okada very often. You know, he's a dad again. I think they probably gave him time off for paternity leave. That's why we haven't seen him. But now he's back. Anyway, we had Hook after this. He made his way down to the ring. And he had a microphone in his hand and he called out Nick Wayne, challenged Hook to a match at the Hammerstein Ballroom. This was last week when Nick Wayne issued the challenge. Hook said that he wants Christian Cage at that show. Instead, he wants to wrestle Nick Wayne tonight. So the Patriarchy's music hits. Here comes Christian Cage out, escorted by Mother Wayne. And Christian, of course, has that world championship contract, which they reminded us of later on in the show. While they're making their way down to the ring, though, Hook is attacked from behind by Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian. He fights them both off. Mother Wayne now is running distraction up on the apron long enough for Christian to hit Hook with the world title case. You got that case, like that scroll or whatever it is that the contract is in. And he hits Hook with it. Now we get a 3-on-1 beatdown. Sabian and Nick, they grab chairs and they did a concerto to Hook's hand. Christian took the chair. Oh, no, it was Nick Wayne who took the chair and smashed his hand. So now Hook has a hand injury going into this match at the Hammerstein in a few weeks. No security, no referees, no doctors, no trainers, no wrestlers. Nobody gave a shit about Hook. Nobody bothered to even come out and check on this guy when this segment was over. I don't know what that says about Hook, but obviously he needs to find some new friends is what that means. Renee was backstage with Mercedes Moné, the TBS champion, who scolded her about asking about Camille. Renee brought up the fact that Camille, you remember Camille, right? She finally quit last week. Not AEW, although I wouldn't blame her if she did. She quit Mercedes. So she's no longer the manager, I guess. Mercedes is no longer her client. I don't know how you would even describe this relationship here. They're not friends. But they're no longer together. They did tremendous damage to Camille's character and whatever aura she had when she first debuted. It's all gone. Maybe she can get it back, but it's gone. It's like Shawn Michaels when he lost his smile. Eventually, he was able to find it. Maybe she'll be able to find her smile again, too. But they shot an angle. They shot an angle on Rampage. Basically, they're copying the Jade Cargill whodunit. Right, we found Jade Cargill half dead, laying on a car a few weeks ago, and we don't know who did it. So somebody attacked Camille in the locker room and left her laying. And the mystery now is who did it, right? You would think it's Mercedes. I'm sure she didn't do it herself, so who did? Now, Sean Ross Sapp, I saw him talking about this possibility. Apparently it's been talked about, or at one point it was talked about, I guess, internally, that the Renegade Twins would be associated in some way with Mercedes. Robin Renegade and her sister could be the Renegade Twins are going to be Mercedes' new friends, and we get the reveal soon that it was the two of them who attacked Camille. And then when Camille comes back, she can go after the Renegade Twins, and that can be en route to getting a TBS title match with Mercedes. Because I don't see how that isn't the direction here. Eventually, Camille will come back. They're going to match the two of them up. It may well be where Camille wins the TBS championship from Mercedes. That's the direction that would have made sense to me from the moment she debuted. But like a year from now, then they just rush through the entire thing like that. Doesn't mean they're still not going to aim to do that match, but what is it really going to mean? They were together for 3 months, 4 months. What is it really going to mean? They were barely established. They made Camille look like a complete fraud in the role. So I don't know if it's going to work as well, but that's the mystery now. The mystery is I know who attacked Camille. I know who attacked her. It wasn't the Renegade Twins. It was Tony Khan. It was Tony Khan and the power of the pen. That's who attacked Camille. So Mercedes said, look, I don't care about Camille anymore. Instead, she wants to talk about Anna Jay sticking her nose where it doesn't belong. So she's going to be watching her match with Penelope Ford later tonight. MVP was backstage after this. He was berating Shelton Benjamin for losing to Kyle Fletcher. You toyed with him. You could have beaten him. You didn't take advantage, and you got beat. And he said, I love you, but he was very disappointed with his performance. Lashley and MVP, they went to go walk away. When all of a sudden a production assistant comes at the worst possible moment, walking behind Shelton, And Shelton's obviously not in a very good mood, so he grabs the production assistant and throws this guy up against the garage door and starts assaulting him. Lashley and MVP came back into the camera shot. They start beating up other random people who tried to intervene. And MVP then at the end yelled, "That's what we do, and that's how we do it." So there you go. Evidently, beating up security and production people is what the Hurt Syndicate does. Then we had the worst thing on the entire show. I fucking hated this. This was the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royale. We have this every single year. This year was no different, and I clearly misunderstood. I'll take it on the chin here. I clearly misunderstood exactly what was going to happen here in this match, because I was of the impression, just based on how they were promoting this last week, that MJF was going to be in the Battle Royal. Now, I know that's not the way it worked last year. I'm not saying that I forgot about what they did last year, even the year before that. But I was of the impression that maybe they were changing it back to the way it used to be. Because if you remember the early days when they used to do this, MJF was in the Battle Royal. This is going back to like 2021. Maybe that was the last time. 21 or 22. I want to say 2021. And back then he was actually in the Battle Royal. And I think it was a couple of years ago they changed it to where the final two people would go at it, and then the winner would get MJF and wrestle him for the diamond ring. Remember Ricky Starks? Yeah, there was a period of time where you would win the Battle Royal and you would just go on to get a shot at MJF. And I remember Ricky Starks won the Battle Royal whatever year that was. Might have been 2 years ago. Whatever happened to that guy, by the way? That Ricky Starks guy. I haven't seen him on television in a while. Is he still wrestling? He'll be wrestling next month. But not for AEW. I hope he's doing well. Anyway, MJF was not in this match. So I was thinking he might be in this match. He was not in this match. Adam Cole was in this match. Kyle O'Reilly was in this match. And then there were a whole bunch of people that really didn't have any great significance who were in this match. So you had, out of the Dynamite Dozen, you had two people who really were the only ones who mattered in all this. And I think we all knew how this was going to end. There certainly was no drama as far as how this match was going to end. This was one of the worst, if not the worst, Battle Royal that I have ever seen on AEW television. And AEW has done a lot of Battle Royals. Tony Khan loves tournaments and he loves Battle Royals. And there have been a lot of Battle Royals that were boring and I didn't really care about them, but this one just irked me more than the rest. This is my least favorite of the Battle Royals that they've done because it was just so dead. It was so dead. I didn't care about anything that was going on in this match. I didn't see the point of doing it. I mean, I know what the point was in terms of the match they were trying to get to, but of all the ways to get to the match, this was a waste of time. The rules were that the final two men in the ring would meet next week at Winter is Coming for the right to challenge MJF for the diamond ring at World's End at the end of the month. They're going to be in Orlando. That's the final pay-per-view of the year on December 28th. So we're right back to where we were a couple months ago, where MJF just doesn't appear on the shows. And you have a bunch of people who are fighting for the right to wrestle him. People fighting for the right to wrestle MJF, who I believe, if I remember correctly, was in the second match on the main card at Full Gear. He's such a big deal. It's so important to fight for the right to get this man in the ring that he's practically curtain jerking these pay-per-views. Very important. So the other participants, not that they matter, but the other participants in this were Lance Archer, Brian Cage, Rocky Romero, Leo Rush, Action Andretti, Mark Davis of Aussie Open, Dante Martin, Darius Martin, The Butcher, and the fucking final name here, Evil Uno, who looked like It looked like a fan got into the ring. Like a fan with a mask hopped the barricade, jumped into the ring, and they just let him be in the Battle Royal. That's what it looked like. So Evil Uno got the early heave-ho, and he was eliminated quickly by Mark Davis. Leo Rush and Action Andretti, they eliminated both members of Top Flight simultaneously. Davis planted the Butcher with a brain buster and then opted to take on Cage and Archer, and that turned out to be a very bad idea because he was out of the match shortly thereafter. Romero and Andretti, they battled on the apron when things came back from a commercial break until O'Reilly pump-kicked Andretti out of the ring. Romero low-bridged Leo Rush, and then he saved Kyle O'Reilly from an Archer and Cage chokebomb attempt. But then he suffered the consequences, and he got launched onto the pile of people outside the ring. Cole eliminated the Butcher, and that left the final four as Brian Cage, Lance Archer, Adam Cole, and Kyle O'Reilly. And the finish came when Cole and O'Reilly, they hit stereo baseball slides to each man on opposite sides of the ring. They were out on the apron. That sent Cage and Archer out to the floor. So Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly win the Battle Royal and now will wrestle at Winter is Coming next Wednesday for the right to challenge for the Diamond Ring against MJF at World's End. And when the match was over, we had Cole offering a handshake, and O'Reilly just brushed him off, and he walked away. The drama continues. Of course, I can't give a shit about any of this, but the drama continues with these two men. This sucked. I didn't like this. This was the low light of the entire show, and this whole drama with Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, I've been saying it the last few weeks. I can't bring myself to care about this. I just want to get to Adam Cole and MJF already. That's got to be the match at World's End. I cannot fathom them wanting to tease us and drag this out into the new year by having Kyle O'Reilly get the shock win and doing Kyle O'Reilly and MJF. Because, I mean, look, I'm not saying there's no chance of that happening. They did MJF and Roddy at Full Gear. They may want MJF to beat each of his friends before Adam Cole gets his hands on MJF. That is very possible. There is absolutely a possibility that we could get Kyle O'Reilly and MJF at World's End. I think the match is Adam Cole, because I think, you know, the timing of it, 1 year after the big angle they shot at World's End a year ago, the night that MJF lost the championship and the devil reveal, it's the perfect night to do Cole and MJF. But these fuckers may well go and do MJF and Kyle O'Reilly. And I just pray to the wrestling gods that that is not what the plan is here, because I just can't take this anymore. Just get to the match already, please. Please. Yes, Fire Panda says, how could you dislike this battle royal? It was filled with people that are just on fire right now. Yes, yes, you could set all of them on fire. Pretty much, and I don't think that it would make a lick of difference. Nobody would even notice if you set them all on fire. Except maybe Adam Cole, that's about it. Fucking awful. We go backstage. Enough of this, let's move on. We go backstage to the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. As Renee walks up, and Billy and Anthony Bowens, they look annoyed. Kind of like how I look right now. Billy said that MVP is so in Max Caster's head right now that he just can't think straight. Caster is wrestling Swerve Strickland tonight, so you know. Billy said that he's going about this tonight all wrong. And Bowen sarcastically told his partner, go prove that you're the best wrestler alive, because this is what Max Caster has been saying now for weeks. He's been calling himself the best wrestler alive. Caster thanks him, and then he wants all their hands in for support. Nobody puts their hands in. He puts his hand in, but nobody else puts their hand in. And he struts off for his match, and that left Billy Gunn and Anthony Bowens just baffled at the delusion of Max Caster. And that led into the next match, which was Max Caster going one-on-one with Swerve Strickland. This stems from the backstage confrontation they had on the show recently. Caster wrapped to the ring. And he had a few cracks and digs in there about Swerve and his childhood home or his mother. I mean, he was saying shit. And the look on Swerve's face, because they kept cutting back to Swerve in the ring. And he just had a look on his face like he was all business. This man was ready to kill. And that's exactly what he did. He immediately went outside and he took Caster's head off with a boot, drove him into the guardrail. In the ring, Caster tried a Famouser, but Strickland sidestepped and hit a suplex that sent Caster back outside. Inside, Caster got off one springboard move. I think that's about all he got. And Strickland popped right up. He fired off not one, not two, but three house call kicks. And that's all she wrote. Easy win for the former AEW World Champion, as it should be. After the match, Strickland was about to go leave, but he stopped and he opted to go up to the top rope and dish out a little more punishment. And he delivered a swerve stomp to Max Caster for good measure. Swerve was big time over here, you know, after the loss to Lashley at Full Gear. It hasn't hurt him at all, and he's been more intense and fired up than normal, obviously wanting revenge for what Lashley did to him and Prince Nana. And people love seeing him dominate here, as did I. You know, this is the Swerve that we need to see more of. He needed this win. Max Caster did not. Max Caster is not getting any kind of serious singles push. Now, I've pushed for the Acclaim to go their separate ways. Is that going to work out well for either of them? It's not going to work out well for Max Caster. I just don't see it working out well for him. Anthony Bowens, I have a little more faith that if Tony Khan would get behind him, let's say in a even remotely similar way to the way he's gotten behind Kyle Fletcher, another former tag team wrestler, that Anthony Bowens has great singles babyface potential. I just don't see that in Max Caster. As a heel, I think you could certainly do something with him as a heel. I just don't see him taking off in the way that Bowens could potentially take off. Bowens just has something. It's about his personality. You know, Caster has charisma. But I think there's something with Bowens that is worth exploring and worth giving him a shot. Is Tony Khan going to actually do that? Probably not. But I definitely think there's something there. So we then got the obligatory MJF pre-tape video because he's not on these shows now. Probably not going to see him until World's End. It's going to be like Full Gear all over again. He's busy. He's making movies. So in the meantime, we don't get him on these shows anymore. But we got the video from him. He was at a bar and laughing about how perfectly things worked out tonight. He said that he and Adam Cole were white hot and everybody in the company was happy. He talked about record-breaking business while he was the champion. Of course, I mean, they were in the main event of their biggest show ever in front of 70 or 80,000 people, whatever number you choose to believe. Biggest show in AEW history, and they were in the main event. They had an excellent match. So as white hot as something could be in AEW, they were certainly the hot act in the company at that time. MJF said that Cole turned on him. And it created a butterfly effect that left Roderick Strong with a broken arm. And now Adam Cole has to beat the hell out of Kyle O'Reilly, his other friend, just to get a shot at him. And he blamed Cole for Jon Moxley taking the world championship and ruling over AEW with an iron fist. MJF says that Cole is pretending to be the hero when he's nothing but the jaundice-infected villain. And he knows that Cole can't beat Kyle O'Reilly. I will say that Adam Cole is not looking quite as jaundiced as he was a few weeks ago. Hopefully he heard some of the criticism where somebody got to him and had an intervention. I just saw Ricochet. I don't know where he said this. It was on a podcast, I guess. But he was talking about this epidemic of like spray tan or self-tanner that is in wrestling these days. He was mentioning like you go into any locker room and it's like spray tan city. I mean, I don't have an issue with it. It's a cosmetic business. I'm not saying they should be banned or anything like that. But like some people just use way too much of it and just don't know how to apply it because there's no way you're supposed to go on television and look that fucking terrible with it. I used to talk about The Miz. Because The Miz went through a period like this many years ago where you could tell, like, he had the spray tanner, but, like, his hands, and I guess it's just the way that you have to apply it, but, like, like, the top, I felt like the tops of his hands were, like, ghostly white. And then you would look at, like, the underneath of his hands, like, if it was during a promo or something, and it was, like, it was, like, burnt orange. And I'm, like, why do these people think this looks good? Right? Yes, it's a cosmetic business and you're on television and you want to look your best, but like, you're actively making yourself look worse when you do that. So when I saw Adam Cole a few weeks ago come out looking like he looked, I mean, he did. He looked sick. I thought maybe he had, you know, he needed a liver transplant or something. Like, I said, something is wrong with this man. Somebody has to get to him and talk to him. We had Switchblade Jay White against the Bastard Pack, one third of the AEW Trios Tag Team Champions. When was the last time that we had the Trios titles defended? That's a trivia question all by itself. I don't know. But he's one third of the Trios champs. So he had Wheeler Yuta in his corner outside. Yuta pulled Jay White from the apron and drilled him with a clothesline while the referee was tied up with Pack. This was very early in the match. Pack went to ringside, ran White into the barricade, and then we went into picture-in-picture. Pack caught a standing Jay White later on in a brutalizer, and White fell towards the ropes, was able to grab the bottom rope to break the hold. That was a different spin on the brutalizer spot. You don't usually see a standing brutalizer, so that was interesting. Yuta pulled White to ringside, hit him with a Busaiku knee while the referee was distracted by Pack. Yuta rolled Jay White back inside, and Pack picked up White, who hit him with a Blade Runner out of nowhere, and he scored the pin. After the match was over, Yuta went after Jay White, who put him down with a Blade Runner, and then Marina Shafir showed up. And Marina Shafir got into the ring, which distracted him long enough for John Moxley to arrive and attack Jay from behind. And Moxley dropped him with a Death Rider. Hangman Page made his entrance, just as Moxley was about to make his exit over the barricade. So Moxley went to the aisle to face the Hangman, and all of a sudden, this masked crew member sneaks up from behind John Moxley and begins to choke him with a cable cord. You can't tell who it is right away, but then Marina Shafir pulls the hood back to reveal Orange Cassidy, and the crowd pops. Shafir went after Cassidy, who dumped her over the barricade. Cassidy drilled Yuta and then Pack with orange punches. Then he blasted John Moxley in the ring with an orange punch. Jay White stood up. He hit Moxley with a Blade Runner. And when Moxley got back to his feet, Hangman was on the apron waiting for him, and he hit him with a buckshot lariat to a big pop. Then Christian Cage walked out holding his contract case as Moxley was laying in the aisle recovering from his beating. And then Christian just headed to the back. So he's lurking in the shadows just to remind everybody that he still has that championship match that he can cash in on. Let's talk about Jay White here and Pac. I enjoyed the match. So that was fun. The fans have taken to Jay White in this babyface role. And they've also taken to Hangman, who, I mean, he hasn't turned babyface. It's just that he is now against John Moxley. And John Moxley has been established as the number one heel. He is the world champion now. So anybody who tries to stand up against the Death Riders is, you know, going to be cheered as some kind of hero. He's still unhinged. He's still playing the same character, which is great, and I hope he continues to do so, because I think Hangman Page is the best character in the entire company right now. Hangman Page really is the heart and soul of this company. I was thinking about this the other day, because there's been a lot of talk about story, lack of story in the company, or lack of any major interesting stories. Everyone has an opinion on that. Obviously, to say that there have been no stories or no big stories in AEW is someone who just doesn't watch the shows. They don't pay attention. They don't watch the shows. They're a newer fan because you can't say with a straight face that they don't have stories. Hangman Page and his whole character arc dates back to the birth of this company and his failed attempt to become the world champion against Chris Jericho in the very first year of this company. And you think back to that whole story with him and the Elite, and then eventually when he won the title from Kenny Omega, and the way they played that whole story out, long-term story, and the payoff was great. And now you see this character he's portraying where he doesn't look at himself as the bad guy. He was wronged by somebody who made it personal and went after his family. and he wants to be the world champion again. His character has gone through many different transformations over these past 5 years. And say what you want to about him and all the CM Punk stuff and how that all went down, but I'm loving Hangman's character and this, you know, portrayal of him and his whole story. I really look at that as the top story they've told in the history of this company, is the Hangman story. So anyway, I'm glad he's part of this here now. He's back in the world championship mix, and clearly here they're teasing out a four-way match for World's End, with Moxley defending against Orange Cassidy, Jay White, and Hangman Page. Christian does not need to be in the match, because why would he be? Christian has a contract for a guaranteed title match. He doesn't need to be in a four-way match. So he's lurking in the shadows. This is also what we've been waiting for. This is what I've been waiting for and I've been calling for, which is one of the problems here with the Death Rider story up until just recently is the fact that they really did not have anybody credible to stand firm against this faction that Moxley has put together. Some names are out injured, you know, like a Kenny Omega, MJF, who's a heel, but he hasn't been around either. Adam Cole only recently came back from injury not that long ago and is still involved with MJF, so that's his story. This is not his story. And just tons of other names. Copeland is out hurt still. We've been missing those big names to stand up, not Top Flight, not the dark, you know, the dork order, Action Andretti and people like that, right? We need people like Hangman. We need people like Jay White to stand up and say, you know what? We're going to take the championship from you. We're going to put you down. We're going to put down the Death Riders. We're going to stand up. Maybe not so much we're going to stand up for AEW, but we're going to try to, you know, knock out Jon Moxley. And now we're finally getting that. We're finally getting some bigger names involved in this. Heading into the beginning of the new year, Kenny Omega, we know he's coming back at the Tokyo Dome on January 5th. Hopefully not long after that, we'll see him back on AEW television. And we'll get some real heavy hitters involved in this story. Maybe Will Ospreay will finally turn his attention to Jon Moxley and the Death Riders angle. Let's get him in there. But this is exactly what this has been missing. This is what this story needs. I liked the post-match angle that they did here. I thought it was good. Jamie Hayter. She was backstage saying that Julia Hart's mind games don't work for her. That don't work for me, sister. She's more of a face-to-face or a fist-to-face kind of gal. Hayter came back to right wrongs and settle scores, something that Julia has nothing to do with. She said the International Women's Cup tournament means a lot to her. You can't fight what you can't see. So when Julia decides to make her comeback, the last thing that she will see is her. So they established in this promo that the Women's International Cup qualifier is very important to her. And then in the very next breath, she's calling out Julia Hart. I don't think that's going to turn out very well for Jamie Hayter. I was hoping that Jamie would go on to the Tokyo Dome. The whole point of this Women's International Cup tournament qualifier is the winner will go to a four-way match on January 5th at the Tokyo Dome. And it'll be one representative from AEW, one from CMLL, I believe one from Stardom, and one from Ring of Honor. I believe the winner of that will get a championship match against the title of their choice from whichever promotion. I think that's what's at stake. And I thought, you know, Jamie Hayter, send her to the Tokyo Dome, but now, then I realized that there's this ongoing story with her and Julia Hart, who I'm sure is going to now screw her out of her opportunity. And it'll be Willow Nightingale who goes on to the Tokyo Dome, because Willow is the only other name here that really makes sense that's even in this tournament. So it's probably going to be Jamie getting bounced. Willow goes on to the Tokyo Dome. And Jamie Hayter gets the feud with Julia Hart. She gets the short end of the stick. But we're building. We're building her up, I hope. I hope to a Women's World Championship program heading into Revolution. I think that's the time to do it. Then we had Chris Jericho. The Learning Tree. We got the Learning Tree on this show, but not in the arena, not in the match. We didn't have TV time in the middle of the ring. There was no Big Bill. There was no Brian Keith. It was Chris Jericho. And he had his Ring of Honor World Championship, and it was like he was doing a news update. Remember those old RNN videos that Randy Orton did when he was out hurt in the early part of his career? He used to give medical updates on how his shoulder was healing. Is it his shoulder or his collarbone? I don't remember, but it was a news update from Chris Jericho, called himself the King of New York. He called this the New York Minute. And he plugged Ring of Honor Final Battle coming to New York City. It is coming to the Hammerstein, or as he called it, the Hammerstein Ballroom. This was his running gag in this segment. He constantly referred to it as the Hammerstein. Because Ring of Honor Final Battle is there on December 20th. On December 21st, they're doing a live collision, a Christmas collision. And then on December 22nd, which is a Sunday, they're taping Dynamite, which will air on Christmas Day. They're obviously not going to want to do a live show on Christmas Day, so they're taping it at the Hammerstein the Sunday before. So he was hyping up those shows. And somewhere Effie, I'm sure, was just furiously recording a new podcast about Tony Khan. So Jericho said that he will announce his opponent for Final Battle for the Ring of Honor World Championship on the next episode of ROH TV, which you can watch at watchroh.com. I like this. You know why I like this? Because it was brief. I didn't have to watch him doing his shtick, you know, in the middle of the ring. And he was promoting an appearance for the actual Ring of Honor program, which is the way it should be. And I will tell you, they were taping Ring of Honor tonight. And it might still be in progress as I speak here. I did see a spoiler on who the challenger is going to be for the Ring of Honor World Championship at the Hammerstein. I won't give the spoiler away for those who don't want to know, but I will say this. It is definitely not the person that I was expecting. It was definitely not a name that I was anticipating. It was a name out of left field that will be challenging Jericho for that championship on December 20th. They aired a vignette. Looked like they were out in the Wild West somewhere. Showing two cowboys talking about someone returning soon, saying that as soon as the outlaw returns, everyone is in trouble. And then one of the cowboys put up a wanted poster on the wall outside, and then we saw that it said Bandido. So yes, Bandido, as I mentioned earlier, is on his way back. He has not wrestled a match since June of 2023. He broke his wrist, he had surgery. It didn't heal properly. He needed a second surgery. And I don't know when he got cleared. He may have gotten cleared months ago, for all I know. But he's just kind of been stuck in limbo. And now they're actually airing vignettes to tease his return. So we know he'll be back soon. And that's great. Because Bandido is a hell of a talent. He had a knack for, you know, getting himself over in a big way in his matches. Because he's fun to watch. And I'm glad he's coming back. We'll see what Tony Khan has in store. I'm sure we'll see Bandido in the ring with Commander, and we'll see Bandido in the ring with the Beast Mortos. And then when Hologram comes back, my goodness. Bandido and Hologram, I mean, it's like Rock and Austin. I mean, come on. When you think of generational battles, you think of Hogan Andre, right? The Irresistible Force against the Immovable Object, and you think of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. You think of Stone Cold and The Rock, and you think of John Cena and Edge, or Randy Orton. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, all the little kids are going to grow up, and this is going to be their version of that. It's going to be Roman and Cody, and now they will be able to tell their children one day that they got to see the great Bandido going one-on-one against the one and only Hologram. It's going to live on forever, man. Can't wait. We had Anna Jay against Penelope Ford. I like that they aired a video package before this to let you know that there is a history between these two women. You may not be aware of it, or you may have forgotten about it, because it literally goes back probably 3 or 4 years to the Daly's Place days. Remember, Penelope Ford has been out for 2 years. She was out for 2 years. A lot of time has gone by. Nobody is going to remember any of this, because it wasn't, even back then, it wasn't really given any sort of significance. It was just one of these mid-card, you know, programs that were put together. And it certainly wasn't anything that was going to be remembered as an all-timer program in AEW history. So they needed to give people a primer, and that's what they did here. And very dramatic music, too. You know, like you would think this is the main event of a pay-per-view or something, but they did what they had to do. I'm glad they did that. So we had these two women in the ring for the first time in a very long time in what they billed as a grudge match. And Ford controlled almost the entire break. She hit her handspring corner elbow, looked for a moonsault, but Anna swept out the legs. Anna did not get all of a thrust kick attempt, but hit a rolling neck breaker for two. Penelope avoided the Queen Slayer with a cutter, and then she missed a great-looking moonsault. I mean, just smooth as silk. She hit this moonsault, except she didn't, because there was nobody home. Anna moved out of the way and then hit a shotgun drop kick. Ford, though, was able to avoid a gory bomb into a drop kick of her own. Penelope took a long time getting a bridging deathlock, but Anna was able to get to the ropes. And Ford opted to argue with Aubrey Edwards for some odd reason. Let's argue with the referee. And that delay allowed Anna to hit the gory bomb for the win. I thought this was solid stuff here from these two. I thought they both looked good. There were definitely some rough moments here in this match, but a win for Anna now to take her into her next program with the TBS champion. Speaking of the TBS champion, Anna grabbed the microphone and called out Mercedes Moné. She strutted on out. She said, if Chris Statlander, the biggest and the baddest, can't beat her for the TBS title, what makes Anna Jay think that she can? Which is a valid question. So Mercedes said that Mariah May must have kicked her a little too hard in the head, but she admires her confidence. She got in the ring, she got up in Anna's face, and told her that she would come back and she could come back in 10 years when she's actually done something in this business first. So Anna slapped her, and Mercedes started to take her earrings off. Yeah, she was making like she was ready for a fight. And then she looked at her watch, and she retreated, said that it would be on her time. And then the announcers let us know that in 2 weeks, we're going to get the match for the TBS Championship. It's going to be on the Holiday Bash episode of Dynamite. It's going to be Mercedes defending her title on the Holiday Bash episode against Anna Jay. That is, by the way, the same night that Will Ospreay is going to be wrestling Darby Allin in the Continental Classic. So that's in 2 weeks. When Anna lost that match, if you remember, to Mariah May, and I think most, if not all, of the matches they had were on Collision. But they had, I think, a three-match program with each other. And if you remember how that ended, Anna lost, which means that she can never again challenge for the AEW Women's World title so long as Mariah is the champion, which is going to be at least for a few more months, if not longer. So if she goes in there now and she loses to Mercedes, which is the only other women's championship they have, she's going to be off in the wilderness somewhere because she's not going to have anything to fight for. So if you're Anna Jay or you're an Anna Jay fan, you're hoping she wins that title. And I can't sit here and say there's 0% chance, but I'm going to say there's probably a 5% chance that Anna Jay will actually win the title. Anna, you know, she went on her little excursion to Japan, and she was wrestling in Stardom. She was over there for a bit, and she came back, and you could definitely see the improvement in her. It did her good. Does that mean she's going to be TBS champion, or she's being groomed to be the one to beat Mercedes? It doesn't feel like the plan is for her to be the one to do that. Again, I still think it could be Camille. I still think that's probably a story they're going to want to get back to, and they're going to want to do that match at some point. So no, I don't see there being a title change. And when Anna loses, I don't know where she goes from here, because she's not going to have any title to fight for. Earlier today, Renee conducted a sit-down interview with the women's world champion that I just mentioned, Mariah May. And Renee brought up Mariah's issues with a woman that she claims she still loves. Of course, talking about Mina Shirakawa. Mariah talked about giving her friend a title shot. She said, shaking your tits will only get you so far, and it's time to go to work. Well, actually, traditionally in the wrestling business, it will get you pretty far. It got a lot of women on Monday Night Raw many years ago. How do you think they were discovered in the Diva Search? This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Everybody listening to this has safeguards on their computer right now. I can guarantee it. You've got a password or a passcode to get into it, or an antivirus program, encrypted files, something, because you want to make sure that you're protecting yourself. But what about when you're browsing around online? Going online unprotected is like leaving your door unlocked when you leave your house. You might trust your neighbors, but what about that creepy guy at the end of the block? You know, the one who drives that white van around the elementary school all the time. I don't trust that guy. I definitely wouldn't trust him enough to keep my door unlocked. With ExpressVPN, you can stay safe without having to trust any random strangers. We don't do that stranger danger stuff around here, no sir. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, that could be in an airport, it could be in a hotel, your online data is not secure. That means any hacker on that same network can easily access your personal data and do any number of things with it, none of them good. It's not hard. A 12-year-old could do it. Hackers make up to $1,000 per mark, which is what you are to them. You are nothing more than a mark. They can make up to $1,000 selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Now, what makes ExpressVPN the best VPN? It's super secure, and it's super easy to use. You open the app, you click one button, and you're done. It also works on all of your devices. There's a reason why it is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. In my travels this year, I always made sure that I have ExpressVPN installed and active on my phone to keep my important data private the way it should be. That's why it's important to me. My information is for my eyes only, not for anybody else. That's why it's my data, not theirs. With things like phishing scams and all sorts of identity theft, there's no such thing as being too careful. Right now, you can take advantage of ExpressVPN's Black Friday Cyber Monday offer to get the absolute best VPN deal that you will find all year. Use my personal link, expressvpn.com/solomonster. To get 4 extra months with the 12-month plan or 6 extra months with the 24-month plan, totally free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 4 or even 6 months of ExpressVPN for free. Mina Shirakawa could be seen stomping her way in the background because they were sitting in I don't know where the fuck they were. They were in like the lobby of a hotel or something. They were just this wide open area. But off in the background, you could see someone. Clearly it was Mina. And she was stomping through the hallway and she disappeared. Like a little Easter egg in the background as the promo continued here. Mariah didn't notice and Renee didn't notice. So Mariah said the women's division is shit. They bleeped what she said, but she said basically the women's division is shit. And she implied that it's because she's such a dominant champion. So then Mina shows up. I guess Mina, it was kind of weird because Mina went this way and she must have gone all the way around just to kind of, I guess, sneak up. I guess that was the idea. She's going to sneak up behind Mariah. And Renee ran away when she saw Mina. She just got the hell out of there. Mina had a champagne bottle. But she didn't hit her in the head with it. She handed the champagne bottle to Mariah May. And she told Mariah, do it to my face. And then she said, winter is coming. Make me work. Right? Because what did Mariah say before? They're shaking their tits. Nobody wants to put in the work. So this was Mina sending a message to Mariah saying, put me to work. Make me work. And then she walked off and the parting shot was the champion sitting there with a champagne bottle in her hand. So they're going to have their match for the championship next week on the Winter is Coming episode. The main event saw Brody King representing the House of Black in a Continental Classic Gold League tournament match against Claudio Castagnoli, one third of the AEW Trios champions who never defend their titles. In the main event last week, Brody King pinned Darby Allin. And now he is back in the main event here against Claudio. These two men met in last year's Continental Classic, and Brody came away with a win in that match. What I was expecting out of this is exactly what I got. We had two big guys that hit hard, went in there, and what did they do? They hit each other really hard, and they beat the crap out of each other. Swinging for the fences. Claudio's chest was already beat red. We were barely into the opening minutes of the match. And then he went to work on Brody's right arm. King battled back with a running senton for a two count, but he missed a charge in the corner, and that allowed Claudio to drop kick the leg out, and then he hit a double stomp before wrapping Brody's arm around the ring post repeatedly. Claudio worked the arm throughout the entire commercial break. So the story of this match, you know, psychology-wise, was the arm. Right, very similar to Survivor Series in the match with Damian Priest and Gunther. What was the psychology of the match? It was Damian Priest hurting his arm, right, hurting his shoulder, and then Gunther honing in on that weakness. And that's what Claudio did here. He honed in on that bad arm. King mounted a comeback. He planted Claudio with a Death Valley driver for a near fall, and he was bleeding from the nose. It looked like not a lot, but you could tell there was blood. Claudio sidestepped the charge, and he hit a massive pop-up uppercut, and then Claudio hit a Death Valley driver before connecting on the anvil elbows. They did nothing. All they did was fire up Brody King. He got to his feet. He clubbed Claudio with a lariat for a two count. And even with the bad hand, even with the bad arm, Brody King is throwing these chops, and he's wincing each time. So he switched it up. He hit a corner splash. And he connected on the cannonball for a close two count. Claudio tried for a springboard uppercut. King just swatted him out of midair with a forearm. So Claudio wrenched at the arm out of desperation, and then he went up top. But he got cut off, and Brody went up and joined him, and he connected on a huge superplex. And that got, you could tell, it got people in the crowd on their feet. And then Brody spiked Claudio with a pile driver for a two count. King wound up for the lariat. And Claudio bailed outside. A lariat, by the way, being the same move that Claudio has been winning his matches with. That's how he beat Darby Allin a few weeks ago. So he ends up outside. And Brody King goes out after him. He keeps throwing these chops. And then he sits Claudio down in front of the barricade over by the timekeeper's area. And he backs up. He's going to get a running start here. He tries for a dive. He's going to splash him up against it. But Claudio moves out of the way. And King runs himself into the barricade. Claudio then hits a big uppercut that sends him over the barricade. He's trying to take the count-out win. He goes back inside. He's going to leave Brody there. He'll take the points. A win is a win in this tournament. You win a match, you get at least one. I think if you draw, you each get 1 point. But if you win, you get 3 points. So he's trying to get his 3 points here. And eventually, though, at the very last second, Brody King is able to get back in the ring. Claudio went for his lariat, but King hit first, and he got two. King wanted a gonzo bomb. Claudio, though, raked the eyes. Then he grabbed the referee. The referee didn't see when he delivered a mule kick. Lifted his leg, delivered the low blow, and then he hit the neutralizer, and he got the win. He got the points that go with the win. So Brody King here looks strong in victory in defeat. As well as victory is what I'm trying to say. He got a win last week and he looked strong. And he got a loss in the loss column this week and he still looks strong. So I thought he looked great here. And Claudio gets a big win for himself. He gets that win back from last year's tournament match. And now he stands alone atop the leaderboard in the Gold League. I thought it was a really fun main event. And they announced that next week on Dynamite, Claudio gets in the ring with Will Ospreay. So that's going to be something. This is how the standings look right now on the Gold League side. Claudio is in first place with 6 points. Tied with 3 points, we have Brody King and Will Ospreay. And no points for Ricochet, Darby Allin, and Commander. Although you put a little star next to Commander because the poor guy just got inserted into the tournament. So, I mean, how could he have any points, right? That's not really fair. And then in the Blue League, we have Kyle Fletcher on top with 6 points. Shelton Benjamin with 3 points. Okada and Garcia tied with 1 point. And with no points, Mark Briscoe and the Beast Mortos. I'm still waiting on the Beast Mortos against Kazuchika Okada. I would like to see that match. But right now, the Beast has no points. I said it before, this show tonight was not as chaotic as these shows can be as far as the pacing goes. I thought that that was improved. We just got some really good wrestling. There were a few stories that they were able to forward heading into Winter is Coming and World's End, because they got Winter is Coming first. But like the Death Rider four-way tease, I mean the Death Rider angle, the four-way tease for World's End, which seems pretty clear at this point. And then we had that terrible battle royal that wasn't even worth the 10 minutes that they invested in it. Far more to like on this show than not to like. Now, Rampage coming up this week has Okada against Mark Briscoe in the Blue League. We have Garcia against the Beast Mortos, also in the Blue League. And we have Ricochet against Commander in the Gold League. So, there's going to be a lot of flipping and a lot of diving going on in that match. Get ready. A lot of diving going on. They should have Michael Phelps in the front row for that match. Then on Collision this Saturday, we got Okada against Kyle Fletcher in the Blue League. We have Garcia against Mark Briscoe. We have Darby Allin against Commander in a Gold League match. Mina Shirakawa takes on Emi Sakura. Willow Nightingale takes on Serena Deeb. That is in the International Women's Cup qualifier tournament. That's the semifinal. And then next Wednesday, it is the Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite. Jon Moxley and Pac are going to be taking on Jay White and Orange Cassidy. Will Ospreay takes on Claudio Castagnoli. Ricochet takes on Brody King. In a tournament match, Mariah May defends her title against Mina Shirakawa. Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly are going to have their match. Winner of that match will get MJF for the Diamond Ring at World's End, and Jamie Hayter takes on either Serena Deeb or Willow Nightingale in the International Women's Cup qualifier. I would have to think it would be Willow Nightingale, with Jamie Hayter being screwed out of the win by Julia Hart, who still has yet to return, but I think that's what they're saving it for. The lights are going to go out, there's going to be some kind of a distraction, and it's going to be Willow going to the Tokyo Dome. But, you know, you look at this card for Dynamite next week, and I'll say this, I mean, they're loading it up. You know, there's some good shit on that show, at least in ring-wise. They haven't announced any other segments. It's just, you know, in-ring matches. But that's what the Continental Classic is all about. You know, you're going to get a lot of really great, you know, good and great in-ring action, and you hope that they can weave some interesting stories in between. You know, this was probably the best Death Riders related segment that we've had on the weekly shows as far as Jay White and Hangman doing their thing tonight. Mercedes and Anna Jay, you know, it might not be the sexiest program, although, you know, I mean, look, you got say what you want to about the women involved. I mean, I'm not saying that we don't have some beautiful women that are involved in the match itself. I just mean in terms of the attractiveness of the program itself. It might not be the most attractive program for Mercedes, but again, Anna Jay, I think, has improved, and I'm actually very curious to see what kind of a match she could have with Mercedes. Chris Statlander gave Mercedes her best match in AEW to date. I don't know that Anna Jay can match that, but I'm curious to see what kind of chemistry the two of them have together. So we'll find out next week. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll, what people thought of the show tonight. 42.7% thumbs up for tonight's show, 57.3% thumbs down. You can vote right now, almost 1,200 votes in and counting at Solomonster on X. You can let me know what you thought of Dynamite. Hey, I see we met our goal. Look at that. We did, in fact, meet the goal. So that means that we are for sure going to be doing an AEW-themed quiz. I've queued one up, but we're still a little ways off from our Be the Booker goal. So that one's in question. That one's in doubt right now. So you got to get those likes up, and hopefully we'll do some Be the Booker. All right, let me get to your questions first. First and foremost, I'll read your super chats. I would like to begin with Base Beerus, who had no message but dropped a pair of $2 super chats. So, Base Beerus, thank you. And a 12. And a learning tree. Thank you, Base Beerus. That's very kind of you. Look at that. See? We have got Chester Red Wolf with a 5. AEW needs to step it up. I saw a guy yawning in the front row. Hey, you know, Mike Tyson did that once at Dynamite at Daly's Place. He was right there, man. I think he had the TNT title with him. He was holding it and everything, and he let out a big yawn. I don't remember what match was in the ring at the time, but obviously he wasn't very interested. Alex with the 25. I'm going to start off the goal with this activation. Much love, Brother Solo. Alex, thank you very much. Base Beerus says, I'm here for the review. Well, why else would you be here? Is there another reason why you would be here, if not for the review? Dark Effect with the 23. Hey, Solomonster, I just wanted to say thank you for all you do. Life has been so hard on my way over the past few years. And one of the few things I enjoy every week are your reviews and Tuesday Night Titans with JD. Well, thank you, Dark Effect. I'm glad that you can get something out of the shows. And I don't know what's been going on. It sounds like some heavy shit, but hopefully things are better now. But these shows can help you in any way or take your mind off bad shit that might be going on in your life. I'm very happy to hear that. And I hope you enjoyed. We had a great show last night, actually. Tuesday Night Titans, a great discussion. As we do every Tuesday night. I'm all over the place. You get me here, you get me there. You get me in Hog. I'm doing commentary. I'm everywhere. You got to be fucking sick of me by now, don't you? Well, I'm not going anywhere. Dark Effect, thank you. Anthony Remy, American Made is better than American Males. American Males. American Males. I see what you did there. Tyson yawning would be a good super chat. It actually is a super chat. It's been a super chat for years. Unless I deactivated it, I think it's one of the randos. Right? Doesn't it pop up every now and then? It should be. I know it was at one point. I believe it is a super chat. Oz and Glorious, great episode of Dynamite tonight. Funny how good the shows are when Tony Khan is not trying to force Daniel Garcia, Top Flight, and Private Party on us. It was a good show. Like I said, there was more to like than not to like about the show, and that's really all I ask for. Dr. War God with the 10. I love the Continental Classic. Last year's was great. This year, I'm not real high on some of the participants. Commander and Ricochet does nothing for me. Give me Fletcher, Benjamin all day, every day. Fletcher and Benjamin was fucking great. But again, Commander is there for a purpose. I agree. If it were up to me, Takeshita would be in this tournament. There'd be Buddy Matthews. I don't know. Again, I go back to this. Why you would have a four-way on the pre-show at Full Gear that has Buddy Matthews and the Beast Mortos. And Buddy Matthews wins. And the brackets are released. And Brody King is in there from the House of Black. And the Beast Mortos is in there. And Buddy Matthews is not. Doesn't make sense. Oz and Glorious, I don't watch the Fed because I don't support unethical garbage corporations. You know, it's just, I can't believe there are still people who call it the Fed. I mean, that's just... He calls it the Fed. But damn, the Hurt Syndicate fucking rules, and I feel bad for not knowing. The Hurt Business was great. at its time, it kind of came out of nowhere, and they had a chemistry that they developed that was really fun. And then Vince McMahon decided that, we don't need the Hurt business anymore. Bobby Lashley won the WWE Championship, and that was the whole point, was to get Lashley over and get him back to top guy status. Once they achieved that, he had no desire to push Shelton Benjamin or Cedric Alexander or anybody else. But it was definitely, they prematurely killed the faction. MVP's been trying to get it back for years now. Triple H had no interest in doing so. So I'm happy for them that they got it going here in AEW. I think that they got a good thing going with them. The Fed. Yeah, Bliss Fan says the Ent. I guess you can't call it the Ent, right? Because it's not World Wrestling Federation now. It's World Wrestling Entertainment. I guess the Ent doesn't really have the same ring as the Fed. Every time you call it the Fed, I just think of interest rates. Like, did they go up again? Did they go down? Arabian Knight, how do you feel about reports about TNA running bigger arenas in 2025? In my opinion, they first need to be on a stronger network for visibility. They're also losing big names. Well, they may run into the same problem that Tony Khan ran into, for example, in Australia, when he thought he could run a 40 or 50,000 seat stadium in Brisbane, and he found out that he ain't going to be able to do that. So he had a downgrade to a 13,000 seat building. Tonight was another example. I mean, I don't know offhand the capacity of the building they were in tonight, but I saw the seating map on WrestleTix, and it was this giant looking arena, and it's just sectioned off for like a quarter of the building. It's fucking ridiculous. But I know their touring schedule early next year, they are running smaller venues, and that's what AEW needs to do. As far as TNA is concerned, they're running a pay-per-view in LA, and they're running a pay-per-view, I think, Slammiversary at the UBS Arena on Long Island, which is a building that WWE and AEW have run. I think it's great. I think that they should give it a shot. If it doesn't work, then they won't do it again. So for a major event like that, I think it's worth trying. I didn't look at the rest of their schedule, so I can't comment on how big the buildings are that they're going to be running. I saw they announced a whole bunch of dates, but I was just kind of fixated on the pay-per-views. So I'll have to take a look at what some of these other venues are. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to, overextend yourself. You don't want to get too big for your britches here. I mean, they really don't have great visibility on television. So they're not going to be able to run venues on a consistent basis and put 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people in buildings. They're just not. They could do that maybe for one big special event. But this is not the TNA of 2010. It's just not. So baby steps. The bigger events, sure. See how that goes. And then you can go from there. And yes, they are going to continue to lose big names. Josh Alexander is a free agent now. Jordan Grace, I think, is as good as gone. Joe Hendry is going to be there for a little while longer, but he's probably gone at the end of his deal. And who knows who else they might lose. But that's always going to be the case. They're going to lose talent, and then they're going to sign new talent. It's kind of how it always is. Doesn't mean they shouldn't try to expand into bigger buildings where they think they might have the chance to sell tickets. They think they could. I went to many TNA shows at the Manhattan Center, and they weren't in the Hammerstein downstairs. They were in the Grand Ballroom upstairs. But why not run shows there? I mean, again, maybe it's a little cost prohibitive as far as rent, but I would love to see TNA bring shows back to the Grand Ballroom. Or even unique locations. The first TNA show I ever went to was at Webster Hall. It's a fucking dance hall. I will say this, it was definitely a unique venue for wrestling. The ring was super small. I was in the fifth row, and if you've ever been to Webster Hall, it's like at least three levels. And whatever level we were on, you had like the pit, basically, where most of the fans were. I paid extra to have special seats. They actually had five rows of seats up on this platform with this tiny-ass fucking ring. So the ring was way too small. But I loved the atmosphere. You know, and I've told the story before when I got to the venue. It was me and my brother, and we get to the venue. I hadn't been to Webster Hall in years. I think I was there once before that. And this would have been 2008 when I went to the show. But I got there, and I didn't know where my seat was. And I you know, I'm a guy, so of course I'm not going to go ask for help, because why should I do that? That's why men don't ask for directions if they get lost. Although these days you can't get lost anymore because you got GPS. But I'm like, I'll figure it out, you know. But clearly I had a look on my face like I didn't know where to go. And I don't remember if she came up to me or maybe I finally caved and went up to her. But there was a woman standing there, and she looked very nice. And, you know, she was wearing jeans. I remember that. And I walked up to her, and she was able to direct me to where I needed to go. And didn't hit me right away, but that was Dixie Carter. That was the owner of TNA. And I was like, wow, all right then. All right. Got Mother Wayne here in AEW, and you got Lady Dixie in TNA. But I had no idea. But I got directions on where to go from Dixie Carter. That's my Dixie Carter story. I didn't know at the time. I would have told her that we share a birthday. You and I have the same birthday. See, that could have been my in right there. I didn't say anything. Hey Uffman, thank you for the 5 gifted memberships. Appreciate it. And we have officially hit the goal for Be the Booker, so we will be doing that in a moment. Thank you guys for that. Jeremy Rose, the story is so bad, I can see Wardlow come back and destroy Adam because MJF paid him to come back to his side. Yeah, I mean, that's what I said weeks ago. I said, watch these fuckers put Wardlow back together with MJF after all the shit that they went through, and just watch them put the two of them back together. Liquid Sharingan, 32 months of channel membership. 6 more months until my 3-year anniversary. That's very cool. That's very, very cool. Thank you for being a channel member for so long. I appreciate that. Isn't Webster in the Bronx? No. No. Not in the Bronx. I definitely was not in the Bronx that night. I can tell you that. Jeremy Ramey with the $20. It's always been weird that MJF is able to self-book with the win to face me stuff. It's repetitive, predictable. Now, if he was kayfabe bankrolling AEW, sure, but it makes no sense. Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't. It is very repetitive. It is very lazy at this point. I'm just not feeling any of this, you know? I get that he's not around that much right now because he's filming movies and he has other obligations. But I just can't wait for this story to just be over with. Or at least move to the next chapter, whatever the next phase of it is going to be. I could see that, actually. I could see what Jeremy just mentioned about reintroducing Wardlow in that way. Because that was the last time we saw him. He was sort of cast aside like a leper by Adam Cole. Oh, man. MJF and Wardlow reunited. What a fall from grace for Wardlow if that happens. To see where he was headed and the potential that he had, and for him years later just to be right back where he was when he started. What a fucking disgrace that would be. NWO Matt, let's get Jericho to fight and beat MJF and then win the world title. All hail the learning tree. Matt, I'm going to give you a recommendation, okay? And I, as a friend, because I care about you and I don't want to see anything bad happen to you. Make sure the next time you go to the airport, because I know you probably have that vacation coming up, right? You're going away, right? You want to get away for the winter. I know you're going away. You're probably going to fucking Aruba or something like that. Just do me a favor, okay? Make sure you leave the contraband at home. I don't want you to get caught at the airport with it because you're going to be in a lot of trouble, okay? So leave it at home. Hide it away. Just make sure they don't find it on you. You got the good stuff. I'm not going to be able to bail you out. I'm not using my Super Chat money to bail you out. You're on your own. M. Mills. Thank you, M. Mills. M. Mills, I think, is what sealed the deal on our goal tonight. So thank you, M. Mills. Jerry Ramey says, I hope Hangman J.Y. are in contention to take down Moxley. Really like Darby, but Hangman J., Adam Cole should be viable options to end Moxley's reign. Well, you know what the plan was, I do believe. Had he not gotten hurt, I believe the plan would have been for Adam Cole to win that championship from MJF at World's End last year. He would already have been the AEW World Heavyweight Champion had he not gotten hurt. So, Adam Cole as the AEW World Champion is probably something that Tony Khan is building to at some point. He just doesn't feel hot enough right now as an act to be in that conversation. Hopefully he can build himself back up to a point where he'll get there. But there's a lot of other names right now that I'm far more interested to see hold that title than Adam Cole. You know, Ospreay being one of them. I think Darby might even get a token run, you know, before Cole does. But everything's building to a Will Ospreay win in 2025. I'm gonna guess Texas Stadium. Globe Life Stadium in Texas for All In. I have a feeling that's where it'll be. Jeremy. That's why I got Jerry and Jeremy confused. Jeremy says, AEW has the most wrestler comebacks of over 1.5 years as any wrestling promotion I can ever remember. The most wrestler comebacks of over 1.5 years? What does that mean? Robbie with the 25. Do you think that AEW announcing matches in advance for so many dates, will it help with ticket sales? I would think that's why they're doing it. It's smart. Is it actually going to help with ticket sales? I don't know. How big of a draw do you think ticket-wise is the Continental Classic? It doesn't seem to be a major draw for them. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's not going to help, but it's exactly what they should be doing. I just don't know that these are the matches that are going to get people into the buildings. But I'm glad they can announce so many matches in advance. I think it's exactly what they should be doing. Ross Lawman doing an all-nighter. Here's some sleep-deprived money. I pulled some all-nighters in my day, and it's not fun. It is not fun. I don't envy you. Oz and Glorious says, yes, the Fed, as in fuck the Fed. Love you, Solo. Thank you, Oz. The Ferocious. All these years, and I realized when Triple H asked Kofi about his accent, Kofi should have asked what happened to him being a blue blood from Connecticut. Yes, he should have asked that. And then Kofi could also ask after that, why am I not being booked on television anymore? If he would have pulled that on Triple H back then, he would have been buried 6 feet under. He would have been asking a lot of questions backstage. It's a good thing he kept his mouth shut. Ross says, would you rather sell out a 2,000-seat venue or half of a 5,000-seat venue? I would much rather sell out a 2,000-seat venue. 10 times out of 10. Uffman, thank you again for the gift and memberships. Oz and Glorious. Dixie charmed you with her epic MILFy cougar energy. Dixie, I'll tell you what, man. Dixie had it going on. Dixie was easy on the eyes. She definitely had that energy going on. I agree. Raph, apparently Hammerstein is owned by Mooney's. Weird. I didn't know that. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying the ownership. It's the Hammerstein, by the way. Ross Lawman, who remembers you meeting Dixie on the podcast years ago, the story of Pepperidge Farm remembers. Can Jericho even have a final WWE run given how washed he is at the moment? Anybody can have a final run. And there are a lot of WWE fans that don't watch AEW who would not know the learning tree if it fucking bit them on the ass. So the answer is yes. If Jericho ever wanted to go back for a final run, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's going to be any good. But could he have one? And could they be successful at it and turn it into a big deal and make money off of it? Absolutely. You can always book a retirement run, a final run. Again, what happened in AEW, a good chunk of their audience, they're either not going to care or they're not going to know. Jeremy Rose, what I meant was you see them one day in 18 months or more later, they return for whatever reason, injury or Tony's preference. Yeah, I guess that makes sense to me now. There are people who disappear for reasons because they don't tell us anything. And they're not obligated to tell us if someone's hurt, what the injury is. Maybe the person doesn't want to know or doesn't want people to know what the injury is. But like, Tony is just secretive about everything. Everything's great. And that's a great question. And I'm glad you asked it. And I respect it. And it's the best question ever asked. I think you deserve a medal for it. That's a fucking amazing question. But I'm not going to answer it. Like, he doesn't say anything. Nothing. He gives you nothing. So there are people who disappear left and right. We have no idea. I mean, did they go on a cruise around the world? Are they incarcerated somewhere, serving some sort of 10-year sentence that we're not aware of? You know, tax evasion or something? Are they sitting in a jail cell? Are they injured? Do they have some kind of illness? We have no idea. Because he doesn't tell us anything. And then they'll wonder why people speculate and these stories start up. Why do people make up stories? And why do you think? Project Libertad says Moxley is IWGP champion for worst champion of 2024. Did you not watch this show when Chris Jericho was running around as the FTW champion? Moxley at worst is second worst champion. Or I should say at best is second worst champion of the year. And Libido Bell, we are burning trees, he says. Hi, guys. Thank you, Libido Bell. Well, hey, if you burn it, you can smoke it, so enjoy. You can get high off the learning tree. I don't want to get high off the learning tree. I don't want to have anything to do with the learning tree. Unless it comes in as a super chat. That's about it. Am I surprised that TNA has not gotten on a better network? Even CW offered NWA a TV deal. The only reason they offered NWA a TV deal is because it was Billy Corgan, and Billy Corgan has a name, and Billy Corgan got married, and they wanted to air his reality show and be able to air the wedding. Otherwise, I don't think they would have had any interest in the NWA. Although they did have interest in Ring of Honor, and Tony Khan actually turned down the conversations. 2 years ago, they had interest in airing Ring of Honor on the CW network, and Tony was just convinced that he could get interest from Warner Brothers Discovery, and that interest never came. So it's possible Ring of Honor would be on the CW right now had they engaged in conversations, but it didn't happen. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Yes, Umaga passed away 15 years ago today. Former Intercontinental Champion, Umanga, as William Regal would call him. And his son is tearing it up on the independent scene right now. It's only a matter of time. These next couple of years, you're going to see Zilla in that NXT system. You wait. You wait. It's going to happen. Project Libertad says, sorry, Solo, my mind blocks out all Jericho things in AEW, and I don't count the FTW title since it feels more like a participation trophy. Well, it is, but it was still defended on their show, and it counts. I can't think of anything worse than that. And we've had, like, the women's tag team titles. We've had some bad stuff. Nothing this year, title-wise, that I could think of, nothing as bad as that. All right, we begin here with the real Americans. We have Jake Hager, who may or may not still be drunk tweeting Tony Khan. And we have Cesaro with Zeb Coulter. They broke them up just as they were starting to really get over. They were turning into a pretty good team there. Real Americans are going to be taking on the Mean Street Posse. I'm a posse, Mark. I loved the Mean Street Posse back in the day. I did. So I like the Real Americans turned into a good team. You throw the Mean Street Posse in there. There's Rodney with that fucking bleached hair. Pete Gas, Joey Abs. Come on, man. What's not to like? All right, women's be the booker. We begin with Indy Hartwell. Currently on the sidelines, and we don't know where Indy is going to end up. But recently released by WWE. She's been doing a lot of training, I will say, with AEW talent. That might be a sign of where we may see Indy Hartwell soon enough. That's right. Soft spot for the posse. Soft spot for the posse. Indy Hartwell against Sky Blue. How are we feeling about this? Give me some feedback here. I know we have a lot of Sky Blue fans. I know that. I know what I'm leaning towards, and you're gonna hate me for this. You're gonna hate me for this. Not too bad. I'm the booker, and you're not. That's how it goes. I knew I would piss off all the Sky Blue fans. That's a shame. All right, men's be the booker. We begin with the ace going into his final year. John Cena is not the only ace going into his final year. The ace is heading into his final year as an active professional wrestler. Hiroshi Tanahashi. His knees aren't working too well, though. But let's see. Hiroshi Tanahashi against Arnold Schwarzenegger. You talk about a dream match. Arnold and the Ace. Now, there's a match that you never in your wildest dreams thought would ever be booked. You know, why do I just realized something. Like, we've landed on Arnold Schwarzenegger, I feel like, an awful lot recently. He's been getting quite a bit of FaceTime here in Be the Booker. Tanahashi and Schwarzenegger. What a battle that would be. Interesting, right? It is interesting. That is an interesting one. NWO Matt Solo wants some of the stash? Let me know, brother. I'm good. It's all you. Just don't get caught with it. Not in the airport. Richie, do you think Jericho would return to WWE? Also, who is your favorite actor? Everybody at some point returns to WWE, although I could see Moxley being one of the few who doesn't. But do I think Jericho will eventually be back in WWE? Yes, I do. It's not going to be a full-time run or anything like that, but yes, I believe he will be back. Who's my favorite actor? You know, Denzel is one of my favorites. I just watched Training Day again for the first time in years. What a fun fucking movie that was. I don't know. You know, Denzel's pretty high up there. Denzel Washington is, maybe I'll go with Denzel, but then, man, I don't know. There's a lot of actors I like, but I think I'm going to go Denzel. Pass Solo a gummy. It's funny, I was, years ago, I was at a friend's house. I won't say which friend, but I was at a friend's house. And we were all getting ready to go out somewhere, and he had gummies on the table. And I used to like gummy bears, like especially the red ones. And he had a red gummy bear. I go, oh, a gummy bear. And I think I took two of them. And I eat them, and then they realize what I've done. And they're like, oh, I'm like, what? And then they told me what they were. And I go, ah, fuck. Yeah, that was a fun day. That was a fun day. Why would you do that? Why would you leave gummy bears just laying around like that? Ross Lawman, I'll be in the States next year. I want to come to House of Glory. When and where can I see 2025 dates, and I'll plan my trip with the missus around the show without her knowing? Well, that's funny. We don't really have the dates announced far in advance. So my advice to you, I don't know when you're planning, like around what time of year, early in the year, late in the year. I think the most advanced heads up notice that we can give as far as dates, you know, there might be a show a couple months away. But it's not like we have a whole calendar mapped out for the next 6 months. So I wish I had a better answer for you. The best answer I could give is just kind of stay tuned to the announcements that we make on social media. There could be a big show that gets announced, and maybe it's 2 or 3 months in advance, but you're not going to get anything announced longer than that. It's just, unfortunately, that's just the way it is. But hopefully you can make it out. I think the missus will enjoy it. I think she'll enjoy herself. We've got Devin from New Jersey. Buy or sell, more damaging and infamous run. Hulk Hogan in TNA or CM Punk in AEW? CM Punk in AEW. Definitely more infamous. And Jake from the Windy City, Solomonster, do you have your Spotify Wrapped? I have not checked my Spotify Wrapped, but I'm glad you brought that up. I want to say thank you to everybody who has been tweeting me all day long. I am in many of your Spotify Wrapped. And I am number one on many of your lists above all other podcasts, and not just wrestling, but all other podcasts of all kinds. And that is very cool. And it makes me feel very warm and fuzzy inside. A lot of you, it's like hundreds of thousands of minutes logged for the entire year listening to me, all the reviews and all the main shows. And that's awesome. I mean, we came in number one on almost every single Spotify Wrap that people tagged me in today. So keep doing that. I want to see what your Spotify Wraps are, especially if I'm on there. But I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who has listened to all the shows throughout the year. It's very cool. And I do appreciate that very much. So if you want to get Solo gummies, just leave them out. Well, I've learned my lesson now. See, I will not pick up food unless I know exactly what it is. I learned my lesson after that day. Trill Mexican. Will Hogg ever do a show in Miami? Possible. We've talked about Orlando. So, if anything, it would probably be Orlando before Miami. Nothing is official yet, but I will say, yes, it is possible. Arabian Knight says, Moxley will not go back to WWE after the inoculation segment. Well, the inoculation segment came under the previous administration, but point taken. I just don't think he has any interest in going back. I think he's happy just helping AEW and working select independent dates when he wants to, having the freedom to do the style. that he wants, even though he hasn't bled. If you'll notice, he hasn't bled since he turned heel, which is very interesting. But it's important to him to be able to go out there when he wants to and work the kind of, you know, kind of garbage, hardcore type matches that he likes doing. And he's not going to be able to do that in WWE. So why go back? He's making great money. He's one of the top names, if not the top name right now in the company. He's the champion. They put the belt on him four fucking times. Apparently he's booking his own angle, or at least he has a lot of creative input and influence on the angle. He's locked in, I think, through 2027. Why would he want to go back to WWE? He doesn't strike me as the kind of person who is kind of in that bubble where, you know, oh, I got to go back to the Fed, as Oz and Glorious would say, right? I don't think he gives a shit. I don't think he has any interest. I don't think he cares. I think he's happy enough doing his own thing. All right, well, we hit the goal tonight. And so what we will do is we're going to do, let me see if I can get this all queued up here. These are called Sporkle quizzes. Sporkle is just a website that has a lot of different types of sports quizzes, and they have some wrestling ones, WWE ones. It's like trivia, basically. And I was looking for some AEW ones because I felt like that would be most relevant here for an AEW stream. So what I did was I brought up, and let me see here if I can get this on screen. Let me see if I can get myself on screen. There I am. So this is the TNT champions that we have had so far in AEW. Can you name all of the AEW TNT champions? Now, this one seems kind of simple. I saw it. Again, I didn't tinker with it. I didn't test it. I didn't do anything. I said, this seems like a simple one, but they give you 8 minutes. You can see the timer here. So I've got 8 minutes to complete this. Now, the only information they give are the dates. So I'm looking at the dates, and I'm going to try to see if I can remember all of the TNT champions. And I'm gonna do this on my own. You guys, if you want to, can talk amongst yourselves, but I gotta have the page open here on my end. So here we go. Here we go. TNT champions. Now, obviously, first one I think of is Cody Rhodes. I see. Okay. So it's gonna fill it out the number of times that makes life a lot easier. Then I don't have to type his name three times. So Cody Rhodes was an easy one. Obviously, he was the first ever TNT champion. We know Darby Allin, right? Darby has been the champion. So we'll put Darby in there. We know Sammy Guevara, right? Has been the TNT champion a few times. Sammy was champion, what, three times, right? Let's see. Yes, three times. All right, so we got Cody, we got Darby, we got Sammy. Mr. Brody Lee. Can't forget Brody Lee. His dominant win over Cody Rhodes. We had Miro. The one good run that he had when he was the TNT champion. Who else? I want to start with the early ones. Well, Wardlow. Wardlow had the belt. Right. Fuck, he had the belt three times? Wardlow had the title three times. Okay. Scorpio Sky had it, right? Scorpio Sky. He had a very forgettable run. He had it twice? What? Scorpio Sky had the TNT title twice. Did Ethan Page have it? Ethan Page didn't have it, right? No. All right, so Ethan Page in heaven. Who is that last one? November of 2022. I almost have that entire first column completed. Who am I missing? Who am I missing? Well, Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe is champion. There we go. All right. Okay, we're doing good here. We're doing good here. All right, now let's start with the current one. We have Daniel Garcia. I don't know. Is this even... Well, yeah, it's got the full gear on there. So this should be Daniel Garcia. Jack Perry. Jack Keery. My fucking keyboard, man. These keys, I don't know what to do here. I don't know what to do. Some keys don't work. Some keys stick. Oh, my God. All right. We have got Christian Cage. We have got Adam Copeland. Oh, my God. I'm missing two. Who am I missing? We went from Darby Allin to Samoa Joe. Wardlow. Hobbs. Right? Powerhouse Hobbs. Okay, we got one left. June 17th, 2023. This person had the title for 98 days. Who the fuck had the title for 98 days? It says Christian had the title for 98 days. Who the hell had the title for 98 days? I swear, I came so close on the Intercontinental title one. That was so frustrating. I was so close on that one. The world champion one, the WWE champion one, I did well. But I got all but one. Wardlow, Hobbs, Wardlow. Oh my God, this is terrible. Did Ricky Starks have it? I don't remember Ricky. Maybe Ricky Starks. No? Oh, come on. June 17th, 2023. Was that a pay-per-view? Is that Forbidden Door? I have no idea. I can't believe this. One spot left to complete this fucking list. Wardlow, Christian Copeland, Perry, Daniel. Who the hell am I missing here? Come on, you know this. Who am I missing? Now, wait a minute. Hold on a second here. Christian is listed at 98 days. The champion before him is listed at 98 days. That can't be a coincidence. Oh. Okay. Okay, all right, thank God. I was losing my mind trying to figure this out here. All right, we nailed it. That was going to drive me nuts. All right, but we did it. We completed the quiz. 100%. Let me go back to the chat. You guys are probably going to kill me, right? The wrestler says I'm going to pull my hair out. The whole point is I have to do it on my own. It's no fun if I cheat and I look at the chat. I don't need your help. That's the point. You're supposed to pull your hair out. That's so stupid, though, right? It's almost misleading because really, should Christian be listed there in that spot? It really should just be Luchasaurus, even though Christian was the one going around holding the belt. It's kind of a trick question if you think about it. Solo Monster is honorable, like Gunther. That's right. That's about the only thing he and I have in common. All right, well, look, all's well that ends well. I got it, right? Can't stump the Solo Monster. We'll do more of these. We'll set more goals and we'll do more of these in the future. Let me take this music off here. Richie has got a $10 super chat coming in here. Harry says we should do the AEW tag team titles next. That would be harder. Maybe, yeah. Yeah, it would be as far as an AEW stream, that would be the next logical one to do. I feel like the world champion one would be a little too easy. Richie says, it sucks that we are not going to see Moxley back in WWE. That means we're not going to get a Shield reunion. Also, I blame the fans more of Roman Reigns becoming a monster than Seth. Well, yeah, but I mean, in storyline, though, Seth still bears some responsibility. Look, Moxley, when I say Moxley's not going to come back, I'm just talking about, like, for a run. I'm not saying we'll never see him in the Hall of Fame. You'll get a Shield reunion in the Hall of Fame one day. I just don't think John Moxley is going to sign a contract and go back and wrestle for WWE. I just think been there, done that for him, and I think he's very happy where he's at in his life and in his career. Uffman Entertainment says, 44 months of channel membership. Baby. And if you're not cheating, you're not trying. One of the all-time great quotes. Christian did win the title off of Killswitch officially in a three-way with Darby. Did he? Okay. All right. Well, then I guess he belongs on the list then. Ross Lawman and Hogan had a full set of hair until he found Sporkle. Hogan never had a full head of hair. Hogan came out of the womb. He came out of Mrs. Hogan looking like that. He's been like that since birth. No one is going to let Moxley do his Rocky storylines. He's got to be able to do his Rocky storylines or else he's just not going to go back. We're going to be back with all of you again on Friday night. We're going to be talking SmackDown, the post-Survivor Series edition of SmackDown. Hopefully we'll have a fun stream like we did for the post-Survivor Series edition of Raw, because that was a hell of a night we had on Monday, and see if we can run that back on Friday. So I'll be live with you then. If you missed any of the content this week, please go back and check it out. We had a great turnout for Survivor Series on Saturday, the Raw review on Monday. There is a 20-minute clip up right now from the most recent podcast on the whole Ricky Starks thing from last week. If you missed that, that's up. And episode 890, up for your listening pleasure right now. Get those Spotify Wrapped minutes in. Make sure you check out the full Sound Off podcast. Be well. Stay safe. I will see you guys back here on Friday night for the SmackDown recap. Until then, take care, guys.